Welcome to the CEN Show, the voice of the world community. Our podcast is fastly approaching 2 years, and I'm proud of our consistency and passion to share the wealth of knowledge of our community with the world. Join us in the righteous fight to educate the masses to improve the human condition. I am your host, Rasaki Maskani. I would like to introduce the panel. This evening, we have the wonderful Fab Five here. We got Professor Amun-Ra, historian Joe Hembrick, Brother Mashinda, and Brother Doctor. And myself, I'm your host, Rasaki Maskani. So that's considered the Fab Five, and plus we have our guest this evening. Tonight's topic is managing emotions, distress tolerance. Tonight's guest is Black LCSW. I met this gentleman back on May 23rd on Conscious Corner with guest Ronnie Fors, and he expressed his interest in being on the show, and I gladly accepted. Good evening, Brother Black LCSW. Please tell us your name, about that name, because that's a nice name, and something about yourself, and then you can begin your presentation.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the introduction. Thank you for having me. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Yeah, I am Black LCSW. Well, let me just, I'll say this first. My birth name is Melvin G. Mercer, Jr., right? And I go by the Black LCSW because I'm what's known as a licensed clinical social worker. I'm a clinical therapist by trade. Yeah, work at Kaiser Hospital in the psychiatric department. I also have a private practice. I'm one of a very few Black male therapists in the Southern California, Northern California area. So I came up, coined the phrase Black LCSW because I just always wanted to remember why.
One more, please. 18.
Can you still hear me okay?
Also trying to create this reminder, we are doing this all month of October, $10 here for Sunday, $10 here for Tuesday,
Brother, Brother Ronnie.
Hey.
How you doing? Can you mute the phone?
Oh, shit.
Just mute the phone. That's all. And then when you're ready to talk, just unmute it.
I got to find out how to mute the damn thing.
There we go.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Anyway, I coined the phrase the Black LCSW because I'm a Black male licensed clinical social worker. Like I said, one of the few in Southern California, California as a whole. And I coined that phrase because I wanted to remember why I got into this work. And the reason I got into this work was to help my community and provide a need for mental health therapy in the Black community, which is my primary goal.
Okay.
I can tell you a little more about myself if you'd like.
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, what got me into this profession, people always ask me, why did you become a therapist? And I say it's because I knew my mother and my father. My father was not in and out of my life, but he was in and out of the home. And I was raised by a young mother. My parents had me both before the age of 21. My father struggled with substance addiction, alcohol addiction. My mother struggled with emotion regulation. So I grew up in that type of household. I was a good kid. I was smart. I went to school. They made sure I was educated. And I actually, believe it or not, I went to a Swahili school at the age of first grade. I went to a Swahili school in Pasadena, California named Omawale Ujamaa. And they named me Macheo Wanga there. And that's where my Blackness began. But I kind of strayed away around when my dad left the home about sixth grade. So I kind of strayed away, got into a lot of trouble, became a knucklehead, and met up with mental health therapy. And I don't know if LP still, Los Padrinos, juvenile hall, but that's still over in Downey, was a juvenile hall there. So I did some things I wasn't proud of, ended up in juvenile hall, ended up at Afrobar juvenile camp up in Laverne. And I was very angry because I wasn't a gang member. I wasn't, I didn't believe I belonged there because I did go to school. I did, a lot of guys in there, dropped out of school, a lot of Bloods and Crips. I knew the Bloods and the Crips growing up in Pasadena, but wasn't a Blood or a Crip. So I was very angry being there. And they asked me to talk to a therapist. And I sat down and talked to a therapist. And he didn't give me a lot of answers, but he listened to a lot of the things I had to say, let me process my emotions. And I just kind of fell in love with the profession there. Moved forward maybe about 10 years after a 10-year stint at Pasadena Community College, which is a 2-year college. I was able to finally get out of there, get my head on straight, and went on to Howard University and then the University of Maryland. And got licensed to become a mental health therapist and provide therapy in California and the state of Maryland. So in between that time, I did a lot of things. I did everything I guess a criminal could do other than murder and rape somebody. Never shot anybody either, but anything other criminal activity I was involved in. So when I said, once I got focused, I was going to give back to the community, and this is the way I give back, as I provide therapy to people that look like me in an inner city community. I'm doing it now here in Oakland, California. I started out in South Central Los Angeles, and I continue on to this day providing that type of service. So,
okay, you kind of went out when you was telling us about the schools you attended. You
went out
one of the schools. So can you repeat that for us, please?
I apologize. I'm working on I thought I had the best Wi-Fi, but maybe not. But anyway, I went to Howard University, graduated from there with a bachelor's in criminal justice. I was a double major there, criminal justice and sociology. And then I went on to the University of Maryland and got a master's in the School of Social Work, in clinical there, clinical social work.
And I'm okay, that's what we missed, the Maryland. Okay, good. All right, so you want to go ahead and start the presentation? That was a wonderful introduction.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and start my presentation now. And the work I do now, I do it under the guise of, once again, the Black LCSW, but I've coined a little term here, too, to kind of help people out that are struggling and young men that, you know, trying to find some direction. As I always say, the knucklehead can make it. I don't know if you hear that. The knucklehead can make it. So that's where I'll be doing this under the guise tonight, that the knucklehead can make it. All right. And I'll be presenting on emotion regulation and distress tolerance. Okay. Let me know. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. So here we go. I'm going to start out with distress. Right. And the reason why I chose these two topics is because I think emotional intelligence and distress tolerance is something that's needed in the in the community as a whole, but especially the Black community, because we see a lot of things going on in the community, such as people losing their anger and their temper, and about, you know, 30 seconds of rage or anger and a lack of emotional regulation has led to a lifetime of either incarceration or someone has lost their life. All right, so here we go. What is distress? We'll start with the definition, right? What is distress tolerance? All right, distress tolerance is about getting through a painful moment without doing something to make it worse, right? Most self-destructive behaviors are associated with people, right, who are struggling with extreme emotional dysregulation, right? And they're in an effort to escape that severe pain, they do something, they act out of anger, they act out of rage, they act out of emotion, right? But acknowledging that it will take some time before the individual learn effective methods of reducing the intense pain or the intense distress tolerance that they're lack of distress tolerance that they're experiencing at that time, I'm going to offer a collection of ways to distract attention, right, and distract and involve themselves in more positive behaviors or more positive distractions that are less destructive choices, such as taking drugs, fighting. You know, some people, when they're in distress, they might want to harm themselves. We got a lot of people commit attempting suicide. We got people that cut and injure themselves. We got people that over-sexualize themselves. We got people that do a lot of things, and it's all because they have lack of emotional regulation, right? The basic idea is to focus awareness on something other than the hurtful thoughts and emotions that the person is experiencing. So once again, what is distress? Right. Definitions of distress include, and please let me know if you can't hear me well, because I want to make sure you're able to get all of this. All right. Definition of distress include psychological suffering, such as the death of a mother's child can cause distress, or the death of a child can cause distress. The death of your wife or a spouse can cause distress. Right. Another example is a state of adversity, right? Danger or affliction, right? Such as your car breaks down, you're in the middle of nowhere, you don't know where to go. You know, just saw people that was in a hurricane down in Florida, a common event that just happened. Those people were in distress. All right. So after the hurricane came through, a lot of the people in Florida were left in distress. Right. Another example would be extreme physical pain. Right. So patients in the hospital, they're getting ready to go into surgery. Someone breaks a leg. That's physical distress. Or mental pain, right? The news of an illness was distressing to a mother. Each person has a certain situation which are distressing to them and experience distress differently, right? It would be helpful that we remember to validate the experience of distress that we may feel or others may feel. So it's important to validate that. All right, so let me go into some skills, some survival skills, crisis survival skills. All right, here we go. You know that you're in a crisis situation when things are highly stressful, right? When the distress that you've experienced is short term, that means it's not going to last long, right? So if you got something that's going to last you a year, you got an ailment that's going to last you, you know, several months, that's not necessarily a crisis. Crises are immediate, right? Or you know you're in a crisis when it creates intense pressure to resolve the crisis now, meaning it needs an immediate resolution now, right? The skills that I'm going to present to you, when to use these, right? Use these when you have intense pain that cannot be helped quickly, right? You may use them when you may enact on your emotions, but it will only make things worse, right? Use these skills when emotion mind, meaning without logic, emotion mind threatens to overwhelm you and you need to stay skillful. You need to stay focused. You need to stay intact so that you don't do something without thinking, right? When you are overwhelmed, yet the demands must be made. So sometimes I know the brother hosting this is a teacher, right? He may be distressed with the finals coming down, but he know he got to get those grades out because the school system is looking at him to present the grades, all right? Use them when arousal is extreme, but the problem cannot be solved immediately, all right? When not to use survival skills that I'm going to present to you tonight. Do not use them for everyday problems, right? That's not a crisis, an everyday problem. Don't use these skills for everyday problems. Don't use them to solve all your life problems, right? It's not going to work for everything. Right. And don't use these skills to validate you and make life worth living. Right. That's a whole nother aspect. So it's not about making life worth living. Right. One skill that I'm going to present to you tonight, and then I'll stop and ask if anyone has questions, is called the stop skill. STOP. If anyone wants to.
Okay. Melvin, you're on. Somehow you muted. Okay, he's out for a second.
This is an acronym. Each of these letters.
Okay, Melvin.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you have went out for about 20 seconds there.
Oh, dang. Okay, let me go back. I don't know what's happening.
You had finished stop.
I finished stop. Okay, sorry about that. Thank you for telling me. So the skill that I'm going to present to you tonight is called the stop skill, like a stop sign. Can you hear me okay? Think of a stop sign. STOP, stop sign. All right. This is an acronym. The S stands for, this is when you experiencing distress. This is when you're getting ready to get stressed out. This is when somebody's done something. This is when somebody's cut you off in the road. This is when you're getting ready to get an argument with your spouse. This is when somebody then offered you to, you know, to get to a fight. This is when anything's going on. This could be used when the police have pulled you over in the community. Anything that people are in our community that may experience something that's distressing, that may be emotional and may be arousing, I want to offer you to use this stop skill. Okay, think of the stop sign. Once again, S-T-O-P. So the S stands for stop, right?
You went out again.
Melvin, can you hear me? Yes, it's Wi-Fi.
I grit my teeth.
Melvin,
yes, sir.
You went out again. So as you said, stop, it went out again.
Okay. Let me stop. Did you hear me talk about the acronym?
You just started with the acronym and you said the S stands for stop and then it went out again.
Okay. The S stands for stop. All right. I apologize, brother. I'm going to work this out. If I need to come back, I'll get this better. And I'm sitting right next to my Wi-Fi. I think it's just, you know, some spirit trying to test me and make sure I do what I got to do. But that's okay. All right. Thank you. So stop. Meaning when soon as you feel this arousal in you, right? First, you have to learn where you start to feel distress. I feel it in my ears. My ears get warm and I clench my teeth. When something makes me mad, I clench my teeth, right? So the first letter, S, stop. This is what self-talk I want you to tell yourself. Stop. Don't just react. Freeze. Tell yourself, don't move a muscle. Your emotions are going to try to make you act without thinking. I want you to affirm and tell yourself, stay in control. All right, that's the first letter, stop. The next letter is T. Take a step back from the situation, right? If you're driving, pull over. If you're in a meeting, just be quiet. If you could excuse yourself from the situation, go to the restroom, just get somewhere where you can get out of this situation, right? Take a break. Let go of what's happening right now. Take a deep breath. Do not let your feelings make you act impulsively. So I told you, take a stop. Now you're taking a step back. O is to observe. Notice what's going on inside of you. Notice what's going on outside around you, right? This is where you're going to get in touch with your feelings and your emotion and your body and the way you react, right, to distress. Ask yourself, what is the situation? What are my thoughts and feelings about the situation? What are others saying and what are other people doing? Right. And the reason you want to observe as well, because this can help you in future instances, because you're going to become more proficient in managing your emotions. So you want to observe what was going on and how I felt last time so that I can stop myself earlier and the next time. OK. Observe. The P is to proceed with awareness. Proceed in my line of profession. We call it mindfully. Mindfully meaning to be in touch with your emotions as well as the way your physical body feels. You hear a lot of people do mindfulness meditation. I don't know if anyone's heard of that, but mindfulness meditation is when you meditate and you run your thoughts through your five senses, right? So that's what you're hearing, what you're smelling, what you're tasting, what you're seeing, and what you're feeling, right? So I want you to proceed mindfully, act with awareness, and deciding what you're going to do next. Consider your thoughts, consider your feelings, consider the situation, consider the thoughts and feelings of others. Think about what your goal is. Your goal is to get through this situation without making it worse. Now ask yourself with a wise mind. I'm going to throw that term out there, wise mind. Wise mind meaning to act with the logical part of your brain and act with the emotional part of your brain, but bring them both together. Bring them both together. So our emotional part of our brain says, I want to smack somebody. But the logical part said, that's illegal. I'm going to end up in jail, right? The emotional part of our brain says, we want to yell out. But the logical part says, yelling out may lead to a worse situation, especially if we're in a professional setting, if we're in a personal setting. This is not going to be a positive outcome. It's not going to lead to a positive outcome. So we're going to bring the logical and the emotional parts of our brain together. And we're gonna think about our goal. And we're gonna ask ourselves, which next step did I make? Which next move did I make? Now that I'm aroused, now that my emotions is gonna make this situation better for me or make this situation worse? Will it lead to a positive outcome or will it lead to a negative outcome? Okay, so that's, I'll pause there and we can take questions if anybody has. I'm hoping you heard everything I said.
Oh, we got it loud and clear, and that was excellent. And I need to apply that. I definitely need to apply that.
We all do.
Okay, that's excellent. Okay, I'm about to go around the panel.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, we have a guest from last week on here. Well, from Monday, Ms. Tori Bailey. Can you unmute, please?
Greetings, all.
Hey, Bonnie, got it, Tori.
Well, Brian Connie, how you doing, Professor Rock and all?
Black People Rising.
This evening.
Okay, so were you able to hear that? Because I know you came on a little bit late, but were you able to hear about that acronym?
I did. I have it written down.
Okay, so do you have a question or comment for the gentleman?
I don't know. Some good tidbits. I like it. I love it. I'm going to share it with others.
Okay. Excellent.
Do you go to certain mindful meditation classes around the area?
I don't, but I do have a suggestion that if you have a computer, you can go on YouTube right? YouTube have, ma'am, do you know about the, have you heard of the Calm app? Is everybody, Miss
Yeah, Bailey? Oh yeah, I have that, uh-huh.
Okay, so the Calm app, for those that have the Calm app, I would recommend using that. Those that don't have the Calm app and have access to a computer, you can go to YouTube and they have what's called the Daily Calm. Right? Mm-hmm. The Daily Calm, like daily, D-A-I-L-Y, the Daily Calm. There's a 10-minute daily mindful meditation on YouTube that you can listen to. It'll guide you just through what I talked about with all your five senses for 10 minutes. If you do that 10 minutes a day, I think you'll see some positive outcomes.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Sister, make it happen.
Greetings and Hotep family.
Abani Ghani.
Your voice.
Yes, so I'm really excited. I'm a social worker by trade. I'm so excited to see your beautiful dimples and your smile. Oh my God, I told my son, you need to jump on right now. I told my husband, you need to jump on right now. You got somebody that look like y'all who's saying what I'm saying. So it ain't coming from me, it's coming from a brother. So I'm just so happy, and I'm happy you're with us, with the family here, the Community Education Network. I can't wait to hear the rest of your presentation. And yes, I stop, and I appreciate stopping, and thank you for bringing it up, because it's something that I do all the time, and I know that most of us are doing, trying to control our emotions because of this hostile environment that we live in. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the compliments as well.
Brother Ronnie, are you able to unmute?
Yes, I'm able to unmute. Okay. I'm at the Water and Hole. Little Mel, I didn't know you had all them credentials behind you and everything, man. Shucks. But it's good to know. Glad to hear. You know what I'm saying? I really don't have much to say. I'm basically listening. You know, I'm at the watering hole, y'all. So I'm just doing what I do. But at least I don't have much to say. I'm just doing what I do. Just trying to hold on. I just got toe up. But yeah, hey Mel, it's good to see you and hear you, man. When you were saying a few of those things, it was applying to where I'm at right now. I'm like, yeah, we could y'all use some of that right now. Right. Yeah. Yeah, just for y'all listening, I'm playing poker. You know, I got a girlfriend say, "Where you at?" I say, "I'm playing poker." "Come away from there. Everybody down there is sick." I say, everybody. Okay. Yeah. So that's all. I mean, you know, I'm going to go back to mute and let y'all do what y'all do.
All right. Thanks for coming, Ronnie.
Man, I'm glad to be here.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Uncle Duron. I know you guys call him Ronnie. I know him as Duron. He's a longtime friend of my father. I call him Uncle Duron, actually. So longtime friend of the family. So you hear people, you look at me, if you see me, I'm over 300 pounds, but they know me as Little Mel because my father's Melvin Sr. So there we go. That's where that comes from.
All right. Cool.
You know, it's a funny thing, too. Everybody seems to call me Uncle, but I was actually born a uncle at that. You know, okay. Yeah.
You and a lot of other people. I was too.
Wow.
Okay. All right, Brother Doctor.
Not right now, but we'll have some probably the next go around.
Okay. Brother Mashinda.
No, I don't. Just thank you, brother, for coming on tonight and sharing. Willing to listen. Again, thank you for your service, man. And you know, I'm all ears.
Thank you.
All right, Brother Hembrick.
Yes, sir. I appreciate your presentation, but I had a question. Did you say that you were operating out of Oakland?
Yes. Yeah, I'm originally from Southern California, but yes, I live in Oakland now. Yes, I do. Yep.
Okay, reason I had, I got a student and a cousin up there that are clinical psychologists also. But, you know, from working in the school system for years, that's one of the big things I tried to get for our kids with mental health services. You know, I was at Centennial for like 20 years, and that was a big thing that the kids needed, was that, and we could never get anyone that looked like us. You know, you're a rarity, brother. I'm gonna tell you, because most folks that we found in the business was gay white guys. You know, that can't identify with our kids at all. So, there's a big need, and it'll continue to be a big need. Are you in the school system up there, or no? You say you're with Kaiser.
Yeah, I'm with Kaiser. I started out in the inner city of Baltimore. I was in the schools there, and I was with the Children and Family Services. So okay. I have a history there. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I got some folks in Children and Family Services also. All right, brother. Appreciating what you were saying. I want to hear some more. What I used to do, you know, for one from the old days when I would get distressed like that, I try to count to 10. I try to calm myself down before I do something crazy. But, you know, we all been through the knucklehead syndrome. Mm-hmm. I was knucklehead for a long time myself, so I woke up and, you know, got right. So, anyway, it takes a knucklehead to help straighten out these knuckleheads we got currently. So, you know, you got the background, you already know what they're going through, so you can identify. All right, I'm going to be quiet and listen to some more. Maybe I have a question later. Peace.
Thank you.
All right. Professor Ra?
About Ghani, Brother Mercer, and appreciate what you said, if I understand correctly. Before I ask my question, I have a couple of questions to ask you. When you were in Pasadena,
yes,
going to the independent black schools, who was the principal or who was the owner? It was a sister, right?
Naima.
Yeah, Naima. I know her well. I know her. What year were you there? What year were you there?
I was there, I want to say 78. I was born in 72, so maybe 78, 79, right around there.
Yeah, that's right. Right around the State of the Race Conference. I know Naima very well.
Okay,
She's a good sister. You know, I think she retired.
She did.
If I'm not mistaken. You know, I taught it. Pasadena. I taught psychology at Pasadena Community College, as well as I spoke at the Jackie Robinson Center in Pasadena. And I know quite a few people that were very strong activists in Pasadena at one time. It's not as active as it used to be, but we used to have a lot of black programs at Jackie Robinson Center at that time. And they used to invite, matter of fact, I got the tape where I spoke there. The other thing is, when you was in Los Padrinos, what year was that?
I went to Los Padrinos in 89. I was at Long Beach Wilson, got in trouble down at Belmont Shore, and they took me to help.
I probably left by then. I was a teacher at Los Padrinos. Mr. Alfred, we used to play basketball at lunchtime. And I taught PE. And I forget what they call the little kids. Piggy was there, who operated the store, and all those brothers, just outstanding brothers up there. I worked there for about 3 or 4 years in Los Padrinos. It's closed down. And matter of fact, they're closing down most juvenile hall for whatever reason. But you used to have to go to school. And you used to have to go to school. Can you hear? Can you hear?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, you used to have to, you know, they may have to go to school. The other question is, when you is most of your therapy for individuals, or your treatment for individuals, or is it for group settings?
I do both. Thank you for asking too. Thank you for your question. I do both. I'm actually putting together, I'm working on putting together some groups in my personal life, but at Kaiser, I work with something called the Intensive Outpatient Program. So I work with individuals who have attempted suicide or contemplating committing suicide. So I do groups. I do groups daily, three groups a week, and I do individual as well. So I do both.
Okay. Are you a member of the National Association of Black Psychologists?
I'm not. I should be, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about, did you ever hear of Dr. Wade Nobles? He taught up there. Wade Nobles, Nathan and Julia Hare.
I've heard that name. Yeah. I've heard that name.
Bill White, Robert Williams, all of them. Malachi Andrews wrote the book Psychoblackology, dealing with kinesiology and things of this nature. Now, do you, at Kaiser, you don't just deal with black people. You no. deal with referrals from the primary to the general population. Is that correct?
Correct. I deal with.
Have you had trained? Have you had any specific training for Dr. Amos Wilson? Say we, you know, what influences a lot of your psychology? They argue either genetic or either environmental is the major two prongs that they say influence your behavior development based on the environment you grew up in, or you can have some retention from genetic transformation. Have you had any training in dealing with, as Queen Mother would call it, oppression psychoneurosis, and that is the experience of being black in America, how you treat black people with psychological, distress?
I did a few trainings. Thank you for your question too, because I'm jotting some things down. I'm gonna go ahead and make some mental notes to bring myself up to speed a lot on what you're speaking. So I've done a few trainings. I know I was reading a book now, and the author, I don't have it right here with me, but it's the Body Keeps Score, and there's a brother talking about the trauma that your body is going through, generational traumas, and how genetic, just what you're speaking of, how genetically that can be passed down to the feet, like through the mother, things of that nature. So.
And so the stop is like coping skills. Is that correct?
Exactly. Those are coping skills. Exactly. Yep.
Okay. So what's your position on municipal marijuana or other chemical and or recreational activities that can be coping skills? I mean, some people say, when I get upset, I just go smoke a joint. Some say I'll just drop a pill, you know, Red Devil in the old days, or F-40s and things of that nature. As Brother Hembrick can remember them, you know, because we came up in that era. But you know, how do you deal with that? What's your position on municipal marijuana? Are people using substances as coping skills?
Well, I thank you for your question too. My position, it's going to sound contradictory, but I'll do my best to explain. I'm not against medicinal marijuana, as because I'm not against psychotropic drugs that are prescribed to you to help you with your emotions, such as Prozac and things of that nature. So I think if marijuana is prescribed to you by a mental health professional, I would say if that works for you and that's what you and your mental health provider has discussed, I would say go with it. But what's going on the streets with a lot of people self-medicating and stuff, with a lot of stuff going on, you don't know what you're getting, right? And I know, I mean, I've just turned 50. I'm not as vintage as yourself there, but I know it's changed over the years from when I was out doing my thing as far as with marijuana and things of that nature. It's changed a lot. So what they're putting into marijuana, I don't think folks know what they're getting. So I'm against, I would say go to your mental health provider and see what they say, and make sure you're talking to a professional. As far as other substances, alcohol, you talk about Red Devils, people are snorting cocaine, things of that nature. I'm against that because I see the effects that it's had on our community. I saw the effects firsthand of what it had on my father. And I think that's just a way of, those are like cries for help, as I think. Because you don't have a way to regulate, and that's what we're talking about, your emotions, or have a way, a positive way to regulate whatever distress you might be feeling. So to answer your question, if it's not prescribed by a mental health professional, I would say stay away from it. Anything other than medical marijuana, I would probably say stay away from it. Occasional wine or something like that, okay. But if you're using it to seek an outcome that can possibly lead to further problems, you know, distress, lead to further problems, things of that nature, I would say stay away from it. Though I think holistic is kind of the best way to go. Some of the things I'm teaching, I know the STOP skill, I have other couple of things that I was going to present here as well too, that I think there's other ways to where you can manage your emotions and kind of self-regulate and learn how to self-regulate that don't require you to indulge in substances that you may not know how they were developed. And
do Black people have different anxieties, issues, interpersonal dynamics than you find when you do your assessments or your, you know, your write-ups are, I mean, do you see that some Black people, because some Black psychologists say that it's hard to be a Black person in America and don't have rage. Mm-hmm. And then when the brother wrote the book, I forget his name.
Him I know
and his
Black woman. Rage. I know
what you're talking about. Yeah. And the girl picks the white doll instead of the Black doll, and she's Black and things. I mean, do you see a difference when you, not going by them, do in your assessment, because you're at Kaiser, so you got to have some Black people, Latinos and all that. Do you see cultural differences or environmental differences or ethnic differences in behavioral dynamics?
I do. But I think that's nurture. I think it is environmental too, but it's also the way the way you're raised and nurtured. I think a lot of our emotions that we experience, I think, I've known this in my studies and where I come from, there's things that happen, right? So something will happen, and a lot of your interpretations, your assumptions about that event that happened would lead to your emotional response, right? So it's how you see the world, how you view the world, and your interpretation of the world. If you're taught, I would believe if we're teaching our children that in spite of, you still can make it. That's why I say the knucklehead can make it. So if you're taught that even though, yeah, you have the knucklehead label, but that doesn't prevent you from excelling. That doesn't mean you can't do what other children could do. I think if you're taught that and your perception is nurtured in that way, I think it leads to less emotional dysregulation. But when you're taught that, you know, the way you respond to someone talking about you is you lash out, or the way you respond when your parents are driving, somebody cuts them off, you flipping them the finger, you know, that's your interpretation. This person is disrespecting me. I think that's big in our community too. Disrespect and what respect looks like. But if you're taught that you're valid, even though someone cuts you off, you're valid regardless of what someone says to you. You're valid where you're wearing a gold chain, and now I'm going hip hop, whether you're wearing a gold chain or not, you're valid in spite of all these things. I think it leads to less emotional reactions. So I'm hoping that answered your question.
At Kaiser, are most of your patients referred, or do they voluntarily come in?
Most of them are referred. Yeah, most of them are referred. But you do have people that walk in and say, "I can't deal with this." Especially with the pandemic, the last 2 years, we've seen a major influx in people coming in. A lot of violence uptick here in Oakland, California. So a lot of people are in distressing situation in their community, and they need some ways. So
a lot of the people you deal with are dealing with a lot of emotional issues or depression, but there's not some that's doing what we call adverse behavior, such as antisocial behavior, such as gangs, and such as, habitual thieves, habitual rapists and things of that nature. You're not dealing with that hardcore, are you?
Say that one more time. I'm sorry. I missed part of your question.
You know, mental issues such as referred to by the court for treatment is different from hospital mental referrals, and to a certain degree, because you're dealing with people that have a potentiality for serious violence, not just suicidal, not just depressed, but really, you know, they're into bullying, or they're into raping, or they're into that. Do you get the hardcore people like that? I'm not you, but I mean, if you understand the difference between getting court referral, mandatory treatment, what they call, you have to go and do so many hours of counseling versus a person that comes from a primary who just confessed to his primary that, you know, I'm thinking about killing myself. I can't deal with this illness, or I can't deal with my wife or children. And, you know, I'm just distressed and I just need some counseling, group counseling, and individual counseling. Is there a difference between that?
Yeah. So most people that come through me through Kaiser are, they're not court mandated. No, I don't get anyone that's court mandated. No, these people have come, they've been 5150 and in a hospital, meaning their freedom has been taken away due to some psychological dysregulation or some type of behavior that they've self-harm or harm to the community that they exhibited. Yeah, but to go a little further with your question, I do deal with individuals who, they're not mandated, but they come because they have a bipolar disorder. So I deal with individuals who have bipolar 1 or bipolar 2 disorder. And a lot of those disorders, though they're not, you know, it's not depression, things that they come out of trauma, right? So a lot of it is trauma-based, right? So you have a lot of people that are bipolar who were raised in traumatic upbringings. So it led to dysregulation in them and led to a bipolar disorder.
What about children?
I don't see a lot of children, but there is a psychiatry department. I don't see a lot of children.
Right? They would go to the children ward, probably.
Exactly. Yeah, they go to the child psychiatry.
Specialists in child psychiatry. Okay. I had one more question. I got to find it. But you can come back to me later.
Okay.
We'll let you all finish the presentation.
I appreciate your questions. Thank you for your questions, too.
Okay. All right. I know that you have a prior engagement that you have to go to, so probably we could do one more bullet point for you.
Sounds good. Okay. One more thing I want to respond to, if I could, to Professor Ross' question. He talked about Pasadena, California, so I just wanted to give a big up to my city if I could. But Pasadena is deep in the civil rights struggle, civil rights history back in the 60s. So I know people know my father went to school with the Soledad Brothers. So if you know George Jackson and his little brother who tried to break him out of jail up here in Marin County, they grew up in Pasadena.
Jonathan,
exactly. Yep, my father went to school with him, Blair High School, back in
George Jackson's son, I think.
Exactly. Yep, came out of Pasadena, California. Yep, Michael Zunzun was another person who was a civil rights
activist. Very well, he died, but yep. Coalition Against Police Abuse.
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of people. Rodney King went to my high school too. So it's a lot of rich history with Black people, civil rights, the police come out of Pasadena, California. So I just wanted to be that.
Michael Zinzin won a big suit, two suits against the police, one for spying on him in LA, and the other one, Pasadena police, they hurt his eye.
Yeah. They knocked his eye out. He was blind in one eye. Correct.
He's wearing a net over there.
That's it. Wore a net with the locks. Exactly. Yeah. Yep. That's him. Yep. Jackie Robinson Center. So I grew up playing baseball there. So, yep. And Pasadena has a lot of rich history with civil rights, as you know, there, Professor Rock. So let me. I want to go a little bit, if I could, into the emotional part of it. I talked about the dysregulation, but now I'm gonna talk about the emotional aspect and give a skill, if I could. Couple skills. So emotion regulation. Now, some of this is going to sound simple, but when you try to apply it, it really takes some doing, right? So when you try to apply it, it's going to sound simple the way I explain it. But when you try to apply it, it's going to take some doing. You're going to have to be real mindful and be intentional. And everything I talk about tonight and everything I do in my work when I talk to people, it's intentionality is built all in it, meaning you have to be you have to be on purpose. Right, so you got to be mindful about this, something that you have to kind of make second nature for it to really have some positive effects for you. All right, so here we go. This is called opposite action, right? When you experience an emotion, a behavior usually comes with it. If you are angry, you might fight or argue. If you're sad, you may withdraw from your friends. Your body causes you to react to emotions in specific manners. Professor Raw was talking about children. So a lot of kids, you know, when they're angry, they don't know how to say, you know, something's wrong with me, something's happening. They act out. So they just label them, that's the bad kid. That's the knucklehead kid. You know, he's just acting out because, you know, he wasn't raised right. But it's often because, you know, something's going on that he can't explain. right? So doing the opposite action, this is a skill I'm talking about now, opposite action. Doing the opposite will help you change your emotion. If you typically start to yell when you're angry, I want you to try talking quietly and politely. But like I said, you got to do this on purpose, right? If you withdraw when you are sad, I want you to make it a point to reach out to a friend or try to create some community where you can have someone to interact with, right? So it's called the opposite action. Once again, the emotion is anger. The action is to fight, yell, and argue. The opposite action is to talk quietly and behave in a polite manner, right? If you're sad, right, the emotion is to be sad, right? The action is to withdraw, right? The opposite action is to visit and communicate with friends or reach out to a loved one, all right? So that's the opposite action. And I'll take questions after this next skill here. Next skill is checking the facts, right? Maybe you could look back at a time in your life and think of a few situations where you may have overreacted, right? Or you might have noticed that something that once felt like a big deal, when you really sat down and thought about it, it really was pretty, you know, wasn't really a big deal. Wasn't even that important, right? You can check the facts in the moment to help reduce the intensity of extreme emotions, right? So we want you to act in the moment to reduce extreme emotions. So here we go. Here's some questions to ask yourself. Ask yourself the following questions, right? When you're triggered, what was the event that triggered my emotion? What happened? Did somebody cut me off? Somebody yell at me? Did the police pull me over? I know we always talk about police in the Black community. I'm sorry. Did whatever happened? Did I lose a job? Did I see something distressing on TV? Whatever it might happen. Ask yourself, what was the trigger? What was the trigger in my emotion? Right? What interpretation, I was talking about that earlier, our interpretation and assumptions about what might have happened, right? What interpretations or assumptions am I making about this event, right? Someone disrespected me. Someone's not listening to me. Someone's not, following through on something I asked, whatever the event is, right? Ask yourself, what am I interpreting, right? What are my assumptions, right? Now ask yourself, does my emotion and the intensity of my emotion match the facts of the situation, right? Or does it match my assumptions of the situation, right? So we can go back and check the facts. Like somebody say, you know, this brother, I hear a lot of young guys say, well, he disrespected me, right? So the facts is, does he even know you? What, was he trying to disrespect me? Was he trying to really do something against you? Did you lose something by, you know, him, whatever he said to you, right? Is that really a factual about you, what they said? Right. So go back and ask yourself, what are my thoughts and my interpretations about the situation? Does it match the facts? A big one is shame. Right. So we hear a lot of people talk about shame. That's an emotional response as well. Shame usually comes from our assumptions, right, and interpretations about something that happened. Right. I didn't do what I was supposed to perform well. Now people aren't going to like me. My wife is going to be ashamed of me. My children ain't going to like me. My mother ain't going to love me no more. Now it leads to shame. Right. I brought some bad, you know, a broad name on my family. I did something out of whack, you know, that beyond my natural actions that might bring, you know, shame to my family. That's my emotional response to it. But think about it. Does that mean really my people aren't going to love me? Does it mean that, you know, What I'm trying to say basically, folks, is what I assume and interpret about a situation, is it actually fact-based? Or is it just, like I said, an assumption, right? So check the facts. I think checking the facts would definitely, not I think, I know research shows that checking the facts and matching the intensity to the emotional response can help us kind of monitor and regulate our emotion. So I'll take questions.
Okay, that's excellent. Let me go to, we're going to go like we did before. Ms. Bailey?
Yes.
Question, comment?
Comment. I have two quick examples of that. One was, let me turn this down a little. One was when my daughter was little, she kept saying, huh? What'd you say? Instead of reacting and saying, I know you hear me, you know, like most parents would have said, I know you hear me, you know, I just said, So I took her to get an ear coning and she never did it again. Okay, so that's the first example of reaction versus a positive reaction. The other one was I was standing in line, which I rarely do, at Chef Maryland's, And this girl just walked up out of the blue and asked the girl behind me, what you looking at? Why are you looking at me? It was about to be a big old thing for nothing. And so I had to step in between that and calm it down. I said, what makes you think she was looking at you? I said, because right now I'm facing you, but I'm looking at the refrigerator over there. And you think I'm looking at you, right? She said, yes. And so finally she said, oh, my mom always tells me that. I said, well, you need to listen to your mother. but it was about to be a big deal. I mean, and the other lady that was with the other lady was about to jump in. I said, oh, Lord, all of this for nothing. And so I just talked to all of them. I said, really? You should have stopped this and you should have done that. And you should have. And so we resolved an issue right there on the spot because you address it. Most people don't want to get involved. They just let things escalate and get out of control. So I have a core counseling degree, and I wanted to ask you, when they're seeking positions for things like counseling, most of the time they only ask for social workers, but there's a lot of other positions and trainings and skills that's out there other than social worker, because always the social worker doesn't have the compassion or the willingness to deal with some of the behaviorisms that happen. Have you ever seen anybody or Kaiser hire anybody other than social workers and clinical psychologists?
Yes. Yes. Thank you for your question too, by the way. Yes. Actually, Kaiser, they hire licensed marriage. The biggest thing is to have a license, right? So you got to be licensed through the California board.
The marriage family therapy.
Mm-hmm. Marriage family therapy. And then they have licensed clinical practitioners, or another big one I've seen. But you know, it's interesting, Ms. Bailey, mm-hmm. and not to push back, but just to give you another side of it. I find that the social workers that I've worked with and that I come at, those are the ones that have the most empathy because we've worked in the community. So a lot of social workers came through some type of community.
Oh, good. Okay.
A nonprofit, and then that's where they got their kind of honed some of their skills, and then they got licensed. But with the marriage and family therapist, theirs is just mostly psychology and curriculum work. Right. So to be a marriage and family therapist, it has nothing to do with going into a community, understanding, you know, the emotional aspects of community work. It has nothing to do with, you know, they don't have.
Yeah, perhaps they should with a 58% divorce rate.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. That's very true. So, so I hear what you said, but like I said, a lot of them, my social work background, that's one of the key components that helps me with the work I do and the individuals that I serve. Like I said, working over in West LA and working here in Oakland, California. But you know, mm-hmm. the biggest thing, and I think Mr. Professor Raw was touching in on that too. You know, the biggest thing that prepared me for the line of work that I'm in is my family. I was raised by a grandmother. And this, I'm not ashamed to say it either. I had a grandmother had 10 kids by probably about 9 different men. My father never knew his father. Right. All of my grandmother's kids on my father's side, we're not ashamed because we come out of it and we've prevailed. My father has 35 years of sobriety now, but they've all had some struggle with drugs or alcohol. They all had some emotional challenge. But on my mother's side, my grandmother on that side had 5 kids by the same man. But she came out of Alabama, had the first one at 16 years old. Had only a high school education, but had some of the same emotional problems from the other side of the family, right? Because she didn't understand her emotions. She wasn't able to process her emotions, and she grew up and she did it the same thing to us. We weren't asked to, I'm not a preacher to the choir here, but we weren't allowed to ask questions, right? My grandmother would say, yours is not to ask why, yours is to do or die. So that's how we were raised. You know, that's just how we
added another component on there.
Added a whole another component to it. But you know, being a single, my grandfather left her early on in their marriage too. But being a single black woman dealing with racism and trying to raise, you know, young people, I understood where she comes from. And she came out of Mobile in the South too. When I started doing, you know, our ancestry work, do ancestry.com, I started to understand that, you know, trauma was just a way of life down there. So you came out of Jim Crow. And then you came west, and then you dealt with some of the same discrimination here in California when you were looking to get a job over at McDonnell Douglas. Now it's Boeing, or you know, the Ford Motors, whatever the motor Right. Or down in the Amtrak, things of that nature. So, you know, so a lot of trauma, a lot of emotional dysregulation, and a lot of not, once again, that interpretation, and I'll be brief here, our interpretations and assumptions. So when you talk back as a child in the Black community, when I was growing up, you were seen as disrespectful, right? Speaking out of turn. You don't talk when grown folks talk. And that's one thing I see in other communities, not to compare, but I see it in other communities. You see little kids and we like, your kid, you know, I just see white kids sometimes. I knew growing up, my white friends were able to ask questions.
Right.
Things, right. Where I wasn't allowed to do that. Right. Mm. So I saw that had a little effect on me too. It also put a lot of strain between me and my mother because where she interpreted me being disrespectful, I was just being inquisitive. I was an inquisitive child. Right. So, you know.
That's a huge factor right there. That's a huge difference. Oh my God.
Yeah, not a better or worse, because sometimes you have, you know, our white children or children of other races who are allowed to exhibit too much emotion, right?
And right, see, that's right.
They can't, you know, can't regulate it. Or we see them out in the community, they can't regulate it. Or we see when they, you know, fail a test or something like that, now the whole school got to come down because they weren't taught to regulate, you know, that way either. So it goes both ways.
I was in Florida one day and a little child, they were Caucasian, or was about 2-3 years old. He caused a commotion in the store. And I said, whoa, this is about to escalate to something else, because she grabbed him and took him outside. I followed them outside. I went and I just stood there and watched what was going to happen. And sure enough, that baby, the mother bent down to his level to say, look, you have to stop that. Little Timmy, whatever. And that baby took his hand and slapped that mother so hard. She had a print on her face. I was like, oh my God. So I walked over to say, I said, if you don't do something about that now, he's going to regret it when he's a teenager. And that's all I said. And I walked away and we're back in the store. I said, I knew something was about to happen. But that's one of those things. And that's what we see playing out in these Columbine instances and different mass shootings and things that are out of control. Mm-hmm. But thank you for your comments.
You're welcome. Thank you. And I would say, too, I'm not going to tell people how to raise their children, but I'm raising two 13-year-old twin boys now. And I've read a book by a guy named Jason Reynolds. And he talks about how his mother raised him. Jason Reynolds was allowed to not. I didn't understand this part a little bit, but I see where she was going. He was allowed to ask his mother questions. He was even allowed to curse, but he had to do it correctly, and it had to be in the right content. So he didn't always just run around cursing, but his mom educated him and said, okay, if you're going to talk, you need to understand what you're talking about. You need to be able to write something about it and be able to explain what you're doing. So she used it as an educational tool. And if you're going to ask the question, you need to ask a question that's intelligent and be able to respond and have a conversation. Right, versus being told that up. So I don't know, just another way of looking at things. But
what's the name of that book?
I'm gonna look it up. Let me look it up now. But Jason Reynolds is the author. His name is Jason Reynolds. I'll tell you that now. I'll look it up. Jason Reynolds, though, is the brother.
Oh, I can look it up. Good. You can continue. Go
ahead. All right. Let's go to Ronnie. Ronnie, you available for a question or comment?
All I can say is, Lil Melvin, I'm going to be on you by asking questions when I need some personal information, because I ain't above all this either, you know.
Right.
No, but it's very enlightening, man, you know. Doing my addiction, I had to go see a psychiatrist or a therapist, and they asked me all kind of questions, but everything what I thought they was asking, and then they drew the conclusion of me and my personality and hit it dead on the head. So, you know, I don't know. I guess it's a good thing, you know? So I'm going to let that be.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Ronnie.
All right, brother doctor. Yeah, I got kind of a question. Sister brought up an issue, like you said, the store, and brother here is talking about controlling your emotions. my question would be kind of like, who's more dangerous? The person that's controlling their emotions or the ones that's acting out? Because the ones that are acting out, you know, got issues. I'm worried about the dude that's controlling their emotions, and you know what's going on, man. To the last minute, they blow up and had no signs. And you always hear those stories. Well, yeah, he never been emotional, and he was all a great guy. Next thing you know, this guy's blowing up, killing everybody. Then the ones you recognize that had emotion, like you said earlier with the kids that's acting out, I think that's a good thing, because then you can identify there's an issue at home because they're acting out. There's some kind of issue, something going on. But the ones that's controlling their emotions, how do you know something's wrong? That's my question.
I think what you described, was it Brother Doctor? Is that the name?
Yeah.
Okay. I think what you're describing there, and I want us to be careful with how with our terms, because you know terms are very important. There's a difference between controlling your emotion and suppressing your emotion. And I think what you're describing with children who are suppressing, right? So they're not controlling, they're suppressing. Right? So they're feeling something, they're just suppressing it. Well, we're talking about controlling it to where it is a positive way that you can have an outlet. And what I didn't get to was there's some positive ways that you could regulate and decompress. Right? So what you're talking about, people with some children, they don't have a positive way to decompress, right? So there's a thing called box breathing, right? This is where you breathe in for four count, hold it, exhale for a four count, pause, and you could do a couple rounds of that. It's known as box breathing. You can even do it for a count of five if you can manage that. And this will help you release, right? So oxygen, get oxygen in and release the oxygen. There's some endorphins and some chemical changes that your brain goes through that would help you release the emotion and regulate it versus suppressing it. So I think what you were describing, and I appreciate your question, was more of a suppression than it was a regulation. And when you suppress things, we know, you know, pressure bursts the pipe. So, you know, when you suppress it just so far, then we just boom. But what we want to do is we want to give children, if we're talking about children, we want to give them a positive way to not just regulate, but to also to release, right? Release it. You could do some paired muscle relaxing. You could do some intense exercises, right? You could change the temperature of your body when you become aroused as well, such as taking a cold towel, putting it on your neck, or rubbing some cold water on your face. Something that you could take that intensity that your body is experiencing, taking that off so you're not just holding it in, you're finding a positive way to release it. And part of regulating it is to, once we're talking about the part of getting past your interpretations, but when it goes further than that, finding a positive way to release that. And that could be talking to somebody, could be pairing it with muscle relaxation that I'm talking about when you're running things through your senses, your five senses, or it could be the breathing that I'm talking about, or meditation, right? So we don't want to suppress. And I think that's what you were describing there, brother. We want to be able to release and regulate so that it doesn't get to that point.
One other last question. How do you feel about medication? Medicating, because I don't want to mention this other famous YouTuber guy who claims he's a something, but he's always saying that Blacks are misdiagnosed and given a lot of medication. Is that true? And how do you feel about medication?
I think we, as a community, are over-medicated. I'll say that. I think America as a whole is over it, but I'm going to speak specifically with our community. Yes, we are over-medicated. I will say that. Right. But there are instances where I believe that to focus a child, they might need, because there's chemical things that happen. And I think Professor Ra was talking about that, too. There's some things that are genetic in us. Right. I'm raising a child now that's on the spectrum a little bit. He's not totally to where you would say is debilitating to him, but he does need a little help to help him focus in the classroom, because if not, he's going to miss some information. Right. So there are some things that you give some of our children. You want to regulate and monitor it with their doctor, but you know, you want them to get the information so that they don't fall behind as well, too. And there's no way to chemically kind of, you know, bring my child up to where he needs to be genetically, you know, so the medication will help out. So people that are bipolar, is we have people that have schizophrenic. When you're talking about children, they have a schizo effect. They're not quite schizophrenic because they don't diagnose that till you're 18. But there are some things that medication does help regulate. Right. So anxiety, for another thing, if you don't have a positive way to, you know, not a positive way, another way to kind of regulate anxiety too. There's some people that have anxiety where it just paralyzes them. They can't even leave the house. Right. So talking to their psychiatrist about getting a dose of something, it does help out. So what, you know, just talking to your mental health professional, I believe is the best thing. But I will say we are over-medicated in our community because for the most part, they want, you know, I'm going to just say little Johnny or little Malcolm or whatever his name is. They want him to sit down and not be disruptive. Right. And they can't, you know, they can't regulate all the things that might be going home, that's going on at home or the things that he's seeing on the way to school. So what they do is they throw that medication on him. So I agree that they are over-medicated, but there are some times when some medication, just as it will with your blood pressure, you know, help regulate things that, you know, we aren't able to regulate ourselves. So one thing I'll say too, and I'll end here, is I talked to a lot of my patients about when we talk about medication or we talk about therapy, when you have a broken leg or you have a sore bone or something, you go to the doctor and they'll put a crutch or give you a crutch or they'll put a cast on your bone so that it helps it kind of shore up so that it heals properly. With our mind and our psychological well-being, we often shun that, and there's a stigma around, you know, shoring it up so that we can, you know, kind of be our best selves or heal so that we don't continue to have you know, damages that go, you know, more extreme situations. So I encourage people to look into mental health. And if it's a little medication you need and it's regulated, you know, I would definitely say do it. I also see, and I'll end here, I'm sorry. I also say, I see my patient as the expert. I have the book knowledge and I have the evidence base to back me, but without their information and their feedback, I think my work is futile. So I see my patients as the expert. So I would ask, if you're looking into medication or you're going to see a mental health provider, see yourself as the expert, not in an egotistical manner, but know what you know so that you can provide the feedback necessary so that you can work together in coordination with your mental health provider.
Okay. Melvin, I appreciate it. I know you got to go.
Yeah, I got about 5 more minutes if you need it.
5 more minutes? Okay, we got Professor Ron Joe Hembrick. So we'll go with Hembrick.
Yeah, brother. Appreciating what you said. I had a question about the bipolar disorder, and I believe you said it occurred from how someone was raised. Can you comment on that, or did I hear that correctly?
Well, yeah, there's some genetic. Right. And I'm not a psychiatrist, so I don't want to speak too out of line, but it's my understanding that bipolar one disorder is more genetic, right? And bipolar two has some, there's some trauma based. They're both of them are triggered by trauma, but there's more some trauma based that that'll happen in childhood that'll lead into adulthood that could come into bipolar.
I got another question on the bipolar. Does it lead to being a fabricator of the truth, lying all the time? Is that one of the characteristics involved in that disorder?
Well, it could be. There's some, if they're having a manic episode, like I said, that could lead to a person being untruthful. So I don't think just right off the people that don't tell the truth all the time is because they have a bipolar diagnosis. So, no, I'm hoping to do a good job of answering your question. So, you know, I don't believe not necessarily that means you're bipolar. That's one of the indicators of a bipolar disorder. Is somebody
last thing I'm going to leave you with. Brother, I don't want to get off any Kool-Aid, but walk. You're a valuable commodity, and you already mentioned that you're over 300 pounds. Walk, brother, and get that weight down so you can be here to help these people out. And I'm going to leave it at that.
It's all good. I appreciate it. I didn't take no offense to that. I appreciate you. I took helpful intent there, I'm managing with my diet right now. I'm working on it, but you know, like I said, I appreciate that. We all got our struggles, and you know, my weight just happens to be a lifetime struggle for me, but I'm working on it. My wife is on me all the time. So
walking is the key to being here. So get on that walking program. That's all you need.
I appreciate you. And I take that definitely and with positive intention. And I appreciate you. You let me know that. I would say also the truth telling, there's something behind that. So I would look into what the person you know, what is it that's preventing them from telling the truth? Are they in fear or something? Are they believing that somebody's going to do something to them or look down on them? What is the threat? Let me ask you that. What is the threat that comes from telling the truth?
There's really no threat with this individual I'm speaking of. They just lie to lie. Okay. There's a lot of lie, you know. Okay. It's not really necessary, you know, and they just continue to lie.
It's serving some purpose. It's not like you, I'm not gonna go too deep, but there's some purpose that I would say that not telling the truth is it's happening there, and trying to get to the bottom of that sometimes is a lifetime struggle with some individuals. They just aren't truth tellers. But I hear you. Right. But okay. I would ask, go ahead.
There's a diagnosis for that too.
Right. There's something right. going on there. Yeah, I would say for a person that just doesn't.
You got time for Professor Ra?
I do.
You got any more time?
Go ahead.
Professor Ra?
Show the picture of Rasha Key.
What's that?
That picture I sent you.
Oh, let me go to it. I don't have it, Professor Ra.
I sent an email and text.
I don't have it. Oh, that's for...
three gentlemen in tuxedos.
Yeah, I would have to. Oh, I see it. Let me quickly forward that to.
Okay. How long you been in Oakland?
I've been in Oakland a year and a half now.
Oh, okay. So Lady Esther's been shut down, I guess. It was so cool. Are you in East 14th Street?
East 14th Street. No, I'm over. I'm by Lake Merritt.
Is Castlemont High School still there?
I believe so.
We had the State of the Race Conference up there where I took some students. But my question is, what role does corporal punishment, or either domestic violence, that you deal with? Because see, when we was coming up, the psychologist was a switch. You know, a belt, you know, I mean, you know, that was behavioral modification by our parents because we, you know, the last thing we thought about, that's your pop.
That's my father there. Yeah, it is. My father with Jesse Jackson. That's him. That's my father there on the, that would be my right. Yeah, that's the right. The right. Yep.
Yeah, well, who's Jesse Jackson looking at?
Yep, I see him. Yep, that's my father.
Okay. Well, he's going to send you that picture. Show it to your pop.
I
took that picture at the dinner, Maxine Waters' dinner.
Okay.
I think it was either Susan Taylor's, the sister that put on the summer thing, Mississippi New Orleans Essence Festival.
Appreciate
that. Was at one of their dinner. Yeah. The other thing is, what role? I mean, you know, we all grew up, in different eras. In different areas. And as you're dealing with the mental issues, do you have anything to deal with the hip hop phenomenon with regards to issues that some of them have with gold teeth and, parents saying, they got insurance and you need to talk to my son, they won't dress right, they won't, they got tattoos all on their forehead, on their nose. Do you get any of those issues?
Some. I get a lot of, people that labeled as thugs, young individuals as thugs. I'll say this, my experience and what I understand and what evidence has shown me in my works with individuals, it's about self-expression, right? A lot of hip hop is about expression and it's kind of I won't say perverted, but it's expression nonetheless, but it's done in a manner that's kind of a deviation from the norm. So when you're talking about the sagging the pants and the tattoos and things of that nature, there's a deviant component that's done there because society, is about regulating, it's about norms and things of that nature. So when you see these young hip hoppers and the way they're doing loud music and the way they ride, everything is a deviation from structure. Right, what I would say, it's a deviation from structure, but it's also influenced, by those who tend to say that that's not the way society should be. So if you look at who's running these record labels and you see who's paying Lil Wayne or let's just say Nipsey Hussle and all these, ain't none of them able to distribute their records. So there's a overall system, right, that's designed to have these young individuals deviate from the norms and what way would say individuals should act in a society that I'm drawing a blank for words right there, but just in a society that's a little bit more healthy, I would say. But they're influenced and they're encouraged to do this by the people who run these record labels and stuff. So I think they're going for the money. The women tend to like the individuals who got money, so that's where you get this deviation from there. Yeah, and it's also a masking of I would say their true feelings because we all understand that I'm gonna use this term lightly. The thug is really somebody asking for a hug, right? So you get a lot of these rappers, all this rah-rah, things of that nature. It's just somebody that doesn't know how to express themselves and hasn't learned a positive matter, or they've deviated from what they were taught, right? Now I want to go into the other question you were asking real quick too, Professor Raw, then I'm going to let go. You talked about corporal punishment. I myself believe in the individuals that I come in contact with, corporal punishment has done a lot more damage than it has done good in our community, even from the people who were dishing out the corporal punishment. So my grandmother did it to my mama did it to me, but where it comes from, and I know you know this, this came from, it's oppression, right? It was used as a form of oppression where it originated from, and then it trickled down to a way to try to regulate you and your behaviors and keep you in line, because I think the individuals that were dishing it out lacked the effective way of communicating and the lack of effective ways of reaching their children. So acting out of anger and doing something out of, you know, out of fusing pain, what we call negative reinforcement to regulate your behaviors. So that's what I say. So, you know, there's a study real quick, I'm drawing a blank, and I want to come back another time if you have me back. There's a sister that did a study that talks about sexual promiscuity in young women and corporal punishment, and how there's nerves around the buttocks and the female genitalia that when it's striked by, you know, a hand, there's an arousal effect that comes in these young women, and it led to, you know, some promiscuity in a lot of young women that grew up being corporally punished and spanked on their bottom. So there's nerves in your bottom that are attached to your sexual organs that are aroused when they are hit. So there's some connection between that too, but I won't go too deep. I didn't do the study. I just read about it, but there is a connection between sexual promiscuity and females and corporal punishment.
Okay, brother. Well, I know you got to go, and man, this has been very informative.
Thank you.
And we definitely want to do a part two.
Let's do it again.
Definitely want to do that. Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And I'll work on my technical issues. I just, you know, things happen. I think I was being tested, and, you know, hopefully I passed the test tonight, so.
Oh, you got an A+.
Hey, I appreciate you having me, and I'm gonna do as I get more and get involved. I want to try to develop with you guys, and anybody has ideas of how I can reach and be an asset to the community in LA. I have a connection. I'm always down there. Just was down there this weekend, but because we're doing everything virtual now too, I'm willing to put some things together because I know I am a unicorn in this profession, and I'm willing to help out. I do it in service to my community, so let's do it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We
We will be. I'm definitely going to be in contact.
What was the telephone number? Professor Rao has it.
I have his number. I'll put you in contact with him. Okay Melvin. We're not able to hear you. So.
Oh, I said I'm gonna go ahead and sign off now. Was there anything else before we go?
Oh no, that's good, man. We appreciate you being here. Thanks a million.
Contact me. Let's review by. Thank you for that picture too, Professor Rob. I'm gonna show that to my dad. He gonna bust up laughing because he don't have that hair no more either. Thank you to the brother that suggested the walking too. I'm on it, and I understand. I just turned 50 yesterday. Matter of fact, October 4th was my 50th birthday, and I want to be here for another 50 for my children. So I'm on it.
All right. You just gifted us with your presence.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you. All right.
Happy belated birthday, brother.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Thank you.
We're a week apart.
Thank you. Libras, thank you for everything you guys do. Thank you.
Appreciate you.
All right. Well, talk to you later.
Bye-bye now.
All right, folks. Before we get out of here, I'm going to tell you about Wednesday, and then Professor Ra, you can tell us about Monday. You want to start, Professor Ra, and I end?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get Damian Goodman, Sister Tori knows him. He's with Crenshaw Subway
Coalition.
Coalition, and I'm gonna reach out to him and see if he'll be on.
That'll be great.
Yeah, Tori. I'll tell him you on too, Tori.
Yeah, you know the Metro Station K opens up on Friday.
Okay. Yeah, but they're doing a good job in trying to save the Merck Park now.
Yeah.
The park thing. So he got a lot of information that we need to hear. All right. And then we're going to try to get Akili with Black Lives Matter or either Dr. Medina.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right, then.
Okay. So we have, matter of fact, is she still here? Sister Make It Happen, are you here? Did she leave? Oh, yeah, you here. That's our guest for next Wednesday. Sister, make it happen. Can you tell us about next Wednesday?
Well, next Wednesday, we're going to be talking about the wonders of Nubia. So I'm looking forward to sharing. The Getty is opening a big exhibit. Monday is the opening for the Nubia exhibit at the Getty. So I will be there with my daughter. She's a writer for the Getty. And so I'll have lots to share on Wednesday when we meet. So I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. Excellent. Thanks a lot.
Moyo.
Yes, ma'am.
Could you make sure I get information to go to that Monday?
So the opening, after that, the exhibit will be there at the villa and you can just make reservations. But the opening, she has special tickets because she's part of the installation of the project. So that's something special. But afterwards, all you need to do is go and reserve tickets. And the tickets are free at the Getty. You just got to pay for parking. Feel free to go to the Getty website and go ahead and make your reservations for the Nubia exhibit.
Oh, okay. Well, tell is okay. Congratulations.
Yes, yes. We have a lot of catching up to do.
Okay.
So you want me to exchange information for both of you guys so you can contact each other?
Well, we know each other's information.
Personally.
We're sisters, good, good. And
we've kind of grown up together, so we know each other very well.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. All right, everybody. What can I say? Conscious Corner and Each One Teach One. Have a good evening, folks.
You too.